Well, what the Lord put on my heart was, I was a little puzzled by, but then as I started to work on it, I realized why he wanted me to do it. And I guess we'll just start with this. So in Ephesians 4:3, this two scriptures or so, or a couple scriptures, but Ephesians 4:3, this is out of the Amplified. It says, "Be eager and strive earnestly to guard and keep the harmony and the oneness of and the produced and produced by the Spirit in the binding power of peace." A lot in this scripture. But as I've come down here every year, and as I have come down here to minister and stuff, I've so appreciated the unity that you have in this church. And just when I listen to, in the board meetings, when I listen to Roger and Mel, they talk about the church, there's such love there for you. There's not animosity, or, you know, the Bible says that that you know, as far as the pastors in your life, those are, they're there to speak into your life, that they're there to help you live the life that God would have you to live, to help equip you to go out and do the work of the ministry, and that they have to give an answer for you, and they want to be able to do that answer with joy, as Hebrews talks about. So the fact that there's so much you can get done in this place of unity, but there is guarding that unity is very important. And that's what the Lord just impressed upon me through something that I went through in my life anyway. And I've been married now, we're coming up on 30 years, and I've never, ever complained about my wife, ever once. Now, before you think I'm so hot and awesome and everything like that, that doesn't mean I've had other issues. Now, obviously, my wife and I have had disagreements. You know, you come into the marriage with your own junk and your own ways of doing things, and it's not necessarily wrong, some of them, but they're just your way. And we've had to deal with the two shall become one, and working on the things that want to make the one become two again. And the unity that's supposed to be there. So that's work, and it's a good work. It can be an awesome work. Marriage is never meant to be low maintenance or no maintenance. Just because you put vinyl siding on doesn't mean that you can walk away and think you never have to touch it again, right? So what the Lord had shown me is that, you know, it was never my heart to be a complainer. If I have an issue with my wife, you would never know it. If I have an issue with my kids, you would never know it. That's always been that way, and the Lord used that to get my attention about something, because something He shared with me, and He revealed to me that, you know, I've got this standard when it comes to my family. That I should back up. I did have one issue in my marriage early on that Lori and I were struggling with, and I did go for help with that, but I went to the right place. So I want to make sure that I get that out there. My conscience is now clean. But what the Lord showed to me is that, you know, you've got the standard with your family, but you've had a real issue with leadership in your life. I found it really hard, to keep my mouth shut when it came to leadership. In the sense, I could be very critical, very hypersensitive to anything and everything they did. I was very paranoid. And that's probably the bottom line of what their motives for what they were doing and why they were doing it. And When the Lord started showing this to me, I hated the fact that I was a complainer, that I was a murmurer when it came to leadership. I didn't like it. And I tried to fix that, and I could not get it fixed. So for instance, the Lord, a while back, I was talking to the Lord about some things, and this is what the Lord told me. See how awesome this is. He told me, "You're weak." Now, what would that do to your spiritual juggernaut feelings that you have? Years ago, the Lord had shown me a vision of just Him and I just laying in the green grass with our arms behind our head, looking up at the clouds and just talking. And He talked about, "That's the rest and the relationship I want with you, Andy. It's very precious." But then when He showed me and I was weak, there was Jesus laying there, and then where I was laying, I wasn't laying there. It was just an indent in the grass. He makes us lay down in green pastures. He lays us in the very thing that we can feed from. There's so much of it. He makes us. That's God's work in our life. But there was this indent in the grass, and I wasn't there. And He said, "You're weak." That bugged me. Now, what would you do when you hear things like that? "I'm going to take care of this, right? I'm not going to be weak anymore." And then the Lord showed me, that's all wrong. "Andy, you are weak, but I am strong." I was off trying to be strong. I wasn't just resting. Lord showed me when I was pastoring, I saw people that were hurting, and they kept on coming in week after week with all their stuff, and they would hurt, and I'd preach and preach and preach, and they'd come up and act like they never heard the message, still going through their issues. It just would bug me to no end. Why? Because I felt an inadequacy of being able to help people. And then God sucker punched me one day and told me, you got people in your church that are hurting. And then he started showing me pictures of the faces, and I could just see the pain in their lives, and they're faking it and putting fake smiles on. It was such a sucker punch. I threw up my arms. I said, God, I'm done. Then get someone that can do it. Obviously, I'm not the guy. But then, like, just like the weak issue, what God showed me is that you can't help them. Only I can. And I realized I could quit trying to learn every book there has ever been written so I could have the information just in case when they walk in I could be prepared to give them the answer they need. You know how tiring that can be, thinking you got to know it all, so just in case, because you'd have to be ready for any question that comes through the door. So I recognized that God had to work with me and show me why I had problems with being a complainer. And we're going to talk about complaining today. And do I think this church has an issue with it? No. But then when I look at the early church, I saw the two things they had to deal with. One was first hypocrisy, and then the second was complaining. That's the beginning of the church. We'll look at that. We'll spend a little bit of time on that, I think. And we can't do this alone. So bottom line, as far as why the Lord showed me I had such an issue with leadership, because he took me back to my early years when we're programmed, and I picked up some beliefs about things that weren't necessarily true that made me a suspect of leadership. My family, my mom and dad were going to be missionaries. I came along and spoiled all that, and my dad was a very messed up individual. He was diagnosed as schizophrenic, and this family I had got blown apart. My dad went for help. Counselor he went to was messed him up because he was homosexual. Well, the church he was in at the time was, they were into wife swapping. I always wondered why they didn't call it husband swapping. And then I figured out why. My mom told me, well, part of the reason my dad got sucked into all that stuff, and he actually tried to set up my mom for a rendezvous with someone else in the church, but God protected her from that. So that's why they called it wife swapping. I never knew that till probably 2 weeks ago. So we're in this church with wife swapping going on, and just messed up. And I don't know if the pastor's involved with it. I never asked that much details about it. I just know that it was pretty snaky. So my dad goes to counselor, supposed to get him help. Goes to a doctor. Doctor tells him depressed. Now he won't listen to anyone because his background is there's nothing wrong with the mind. It's all a spiritual thing. So he's ignoring some of that stuff that he should have been listening to. And the counselor was homosexual, and then my mom took him back to his parents, and they said, well, there's no such thing as mental illness. So my dad ended up leaving him because the doctor called up my mom and said, my God, Kathy, you got to get you and those kids away from him. He's going to kill you. So that's what finally gave my mom the onus to get up, because he would come home and hold her down and beat her up. Show me in the Bible where it's wrong to commit adultery. Because my dad was Johnny Appleseed when it came to young girls. Here my mom and dad are involved in a youth group, and my dad's messing with all the girls in the youth group to the point where one gets an accident in the hospital, problems with, she was messed up pretty bad. Wasn't going to be normal again. My mom is so clueless to all of it, she comes home and or goes to the hospital to see this gal, unaware that it was my dad that was part of what caused the problem. And it was just sick. All the stuff going on and the leadership that was there that wasn't there that should have been. And that's what the Lord showed me, is that you have the reason why you're so suspect of leadership is because you've had leadership in your past that was not good. So as a young kid, I'm looking at these people that are supposed to be protecting me and loving me. My dad disappeared, never saw him for years. And he did go to marry again, moved to California, and surprisingly, he ended up killing his wife and one of my half-brother. So can you cue the country music now? All right. Sorry, did I say that out loud? Yeah. I love steel guitar, by the way. So. And then my wife, I get married. My problems with that relationship that went south. I got married forever, but she decided she's going to have an affair with her high school counselor. 20 years older than her. That wasn't pleasant. I wouldn't put that on my bucket list anytime. And then I get married, meet a beautiful wife. It's a God thing. I got excited for Jesus. I love Jesus, but then I fell in love with Jesus. And I guess this is not my testimony today. That wasn't my intent of getting up here. But the pastor married us. Well, he'd been having a 12-year affair with the secretary. And the pastor, the girlfriend I had got me back into church. Well, he was a guy that really, I found out, really didn't believe the Bible was true. Talk about whacked out leadership. So the first pastor I met that actually was a real true pastor to me was a first AFCM church I went to in Redwood Falls. We were there. I was the associate pastor there for about 10 years, Nate Belkstrom, awesome guy. And then Larry Vasica is the next pastor I had up in Detroit Lakes. So I've been real thankful for good leadership, but the problem I had is I had this gnawing sensation that I was just always so hypercritical of anything and everything they did. I didn't want to be that way, and that's my point. Andy, you're weak. Okay, I'm going to quit fighting the fact of me trying to save myself and make myself strong, and God, why am I this way then? And then that's why God started showing me is you just have this propensity because you've had a history that proves that life can happen and it can, and this is Jesus' terms, life can happen and it can feel like I'm not there, that you're on your own in this. Jesus is there. I was missing where he was at that moment. My dad leaving me tormented me for years. I'm supposed to be loved, so that therefore I must not be lovable. And the Lord showed me he failed you. But I was so centering on the fact of that loss that God said, but I'm here too. I'll never leave you. I'll never forsake you. So in other words, I get my eye off a man who can fail me. We can get our eyes on people. They will fail us in little degrees to big degrees, but God will never fail you. And all of a sudden, the pain of the issue of my dad leaving me, yeah, he left me. He missed out. But Jesus was there the whole time. I just hadn't been appreciating where he was at that time in my life, but he was there. Entrance of the word brings light. And as God comforts us, we can go out and comfort other people. And that's really the ministry we have now, is that we can brag on God and what he's done for us. Amen. So what I'm about to share with you, that's my introduction, believe it or not, is just to be aware that, just like in the Revelation, there's a church that had the walls built. They're high on a hill. They feel like they're protected, but they didn't take care of their flooring, and the enemy came in from the cracks in the ground because they didn't maintain things. That there's things we just have to be aware of, and not to sugarcoat it, and not to pretend that things aren't an issue, because people will walk in these doors that will have issues like I did, a real problem with leadership. I've dealt with people like this that have had bad pastors, manipulative pastors, people who would use their spiritual authority to twist and get their way. That's not fun because it really, really confuses a person. And so they come into the next church because that one didn't work out so well, and they're just as leery as, because what if? Here's a smiling pastor, but maybe he's got a scorpion tail on him, or he's going to bite me, that type of thing, right? And it's a bad place to be in, because how can you receive the gift that's in the man when you are so reticent and guarded against the words that the man is sharing? Because everything you're questioning. God doesn't want us living paranoid. God doesn't want us living in that place of being protected, that we got to protect ourselves. Amen? All right. We're going to maintain some things about a healthy church. In the book of Acts, All right. Yeah, that's not the one I wanted to get to, but that'll work. All right. We're going to go to the book of Acts. I'm just going to take you through this. The book of Acts is an awesome book. I said there's two issues they dealt with in the early church, and it's the church has to deal with the dynamics of inside things and outside things. In the book of, maybe just for time's sake, we'll just go through this. But Luke wrote the book, 14-year transition, really between the gospel of the kingdom and the gospel of grace. You can see that there were some changes coming when Paul showed up on the scene, and you'll see the in and out. You know, the church is in praying, and then they go out to do, you know, they're in the upper room, then they're out, 3,000 are being saved. then they go, they have this unity, they talked about having things all in common, then they go out to be beautiful, Peter heals, so they're in praying, out lame man, preaching powerfully, the high priest arrests them, and they get told, don't preach that way anymore, then they go back to, and pray again, and Lord, you know, give us the boldness, and all of a sudden they have this boldness, and they go out, it's just an in and out, in the church, outside. There's got to be a balance, and this is the two things I realize is that as far as a healthy church is concerned, we got to deal with internal problems, but we're also going to have to deal with external things, and there's a balance between maintaining those, that we come together, we're strengthened, we're that edification that happens, that sense of awe that we can have. The time we had this morning in the presence of God in worship was powerful, but that we, if we stay focused, we want to be a healthy church. Staying focused, dealing with internal problems, but also staying focused on the task of the gospel. We have two things we need to get done. And as the early church and what I've seen in church previously, because I've been in a few, my dad would show up in the middle of the night, for instance, and move. We'd all get up in the middle of the night and we'd move. My mom thought she was just a pirate. I moved about 40 times. Try making a friend doing that. That's real hard. But find out years later, the reason why he moved in the middle of the night because someone's little girl's dad is looking for him. Man, my mom never knew that either. It's sick stuff. The world is sick, real messed up. Oh, and by the way, my dad was a very gifted minister. Played guitar, good minister of the word, golden child in the family. Does that sound right? See why you could be suspicious? Got my eye on you. No. No, I'm just kidding. Actually, Pastor Roger was one of those unique individuals that I just see hitting on all cylinders, and I mean that sincerely. So hearing him and Mel have been a real blessing to me. They're, in some ways, I can so relate to where he's at and how he handles things, because it's a lot like what I would do in some cases, just his temperament and stuff. And So you've got such a true gift here. I mean, he really cares about you guys. Because there are bad ones out there. But just because I go get a bad haircut doesn't mean all barbers are bad, right? So it's good that you recognize the real thing. So be aware of the blessings we have. Amen. But in this church, in the process of going through this, the church had to deal with hypocrisy of Ananias, and then they also had to deal with the second thing they had to do with is complaining as far as the Grecian widows and the Greeks starting to complaining. So there are two things I saw in the early church they had to deal with. One was the hypocrisy, being something you're not. And secondly, it was just this issue of complaining. And there is a balance because, I'll do this one. There, outward. Fail to attend, problems within. Those problems are not addressed. The church may grow at first, but eventually the eternal problems will result in discord and disintegration. I've seen this issue up in Park Rapids with a certain church that started up. They started great, and all of a sudden they blew in, blew up, and blew out. They're not there anymore because they just didn't deal with internal things that needed to be dealt with. Secondly, is they forget, if we get so inwardly focused, we have a mission. You know, vision is what the world should look like. That's what we're headed for. Mission's what we're going to do to get the world to look like that. And we need both those sides. We need both to be doing, working on the family, keeping the family strong, and then going out into the world that has no clue and doesn't want really all that interested at times in what we have to say. Being able to share it in a way that they'll relate to so we can draw them in to be the fishers of men. We don't want to be consumed, because I've seen this too, where churches just get so, my relative that talks about his, or he past he came out of, their church he came out of, is that he says you got to be quiet around this group and when they're in heaven, because they think they're the only ones here. And it's sad, but I've seen the self-centeredness and the bickerness. They become a bunch of Pharisees and all concerned about what everyone else is doing. And that's not God's best either. So Philippians 2:14. And I never realized this until the Lord started working with me and showing me why I had some heart issues. He showed me exactly where I was at and why I had the problems I did. I didn't have to try and fix myself, because that got frustrating, because I would try not to be critical. I'd try not to be judgmental. I'd try not to be a complainer, but I still would. Uh-oh. Do you believe I work with technology for a living? What do I do, Pastor? Be gone. All right. Philippians 2:14. Do all things without murmuring or disputings. How many things? All things. So as far as murmuring is concerned, we shouldn't be doing it. Murmuring is someone who grumbles, someone who's complained. And you know what I saw myself doing is I'd get so bent out of shape about things because I had all this stirring and all this mistrust that I could go talk to someone else about what pastor's doing. Well, you know what he's doing? The bad things he's doing? And not a good thing to be doing because then I'd feel bad about it and then you'd feel guilty. You know, I was here, I was a committed Christian, loved God, didn't want to be a complainer, but I was a complainer. Didn't want to be. And there's some bad things that go along with being a complainer. James 5:9. Just another verse that goes along with James. I think it's 5:9. How many things are we to complain about? Nothing. James 5:9 says, this is, I think we'd be close to the King James, it says, judge not one against another, brethren, lest ye be condemned. Behold, the judge stands before the door. Amplified says, do not complain, brethren, against one another. Well, I was a complainer. I didn't like it. I knew what it was like not to complain because you will not get me to say one bad thing about my wife ever. I won't cut her down. If I have an issue, I'll talk to her. And I appreciate the relationship I have with her. Noah's Webster talks about murmuring being, and this is what murmuring is, complaining, murmuring, same words, is that it's a one who murmurs, one who complains sullenly, and a grumbler. It's hot. It's too cold. Do how many things without complaining? How many? We're not supposed to be doing any of that. Proverbs 6. Here's the scary one. I should have jumped there then. Jump back. Well, maybe I'll just do this. I'll jump forward. God talks about the six things he hates, the seven things that abhors, and I'm just going to jump in the middle of the abhor side. I think for time's sake here, it says, Amplified, willful and contrary be in his heart. He devises trouble, vexations, and evil continually. He lets loose discord and sows it. Therefore upon him shall the crushing weight and calamity come suddenly. Suddenly shall he be broken, and that without remedy. Six things. So that was talking about the six things that God hates. Now he gets into the seven things that are abomination. A proud look, the spirit that makes an overestimate. A proud look, verse 17. The spirit that makes one overestimate himself and underestimate others, a lying tongue and hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that manufactures wicked thoughts and plans, feet that are swift to run to evil, a false witness who breathes out lies even under oath, and one who sows discord among the brethren. And this discord is what I saw I was doing when I was complaining about my pastor, because the problem is I just could not contain the fact of the criticisms I felt, so I'd end up talking about other people. I was a sower of discord. A sower means that it's something that's deliberate. That means it's something that's going, you know, just like faith is a seed that goes into the ground. It says that faith is a seed, it's going, it's a hidden thing. What am I doing it among brethren? I'm looking to divide the root of bitterness, the root of strife, the root of anger. I'm trying to do something, plant something. It says, for instance, the root of bitterness can come, what, spring up and defile many, it talks about. That I can be working in a group, a healthy organism like this, this church, this entity, as healthy as it is, there can be people that come and will spy out the liberty. The Bible warns us against that. Be on guard of that. And there'll be those who will come in with their junk, and they just do not trust the pastor. They don't trust the leadership. Or, you know, it could be this. You could have issues with your spouse. You just can't help but complain about them. Or your kids. Or your boss. Or the weather. Or Minnesota. Or the Vikings. Or whatever the case may be. And you don't want to do it. That's where I was at. God will show you why. God will give you the wisdom why those things are going on, because it's a very destructive force. And because it talks about the suddenlies here, the things that can come on us suddenly. The last thing we want to do is be in a place without remedy. God can give me the hammer for a tool, but I can still use it to smash my hand over and over again, which doesn't make much sense, does it? So it's not God as being the one as being the issue here. So, and griping is 101 in our world. It's just there. It's not, people are always looking, the misery loves company. People will always be looking for something to complain about. And it can be real easy to fall into it. It's not something we're supposed to be falling into. And really, you know, what I started doing the study, just looking up definitions and the words about study, the one thing that just said complaining about God's work or God's people is a direct reflection on the value of God and His plan. God has a plan for life. He has a purpose. And we're really missing out. Just like I didn't understand back when people were doing bad and why I was a kid who was abandoned, that God was there. He was there. I just didn't appreciate it. I felt so focused on my dad's being gone that I was missing out the fact that God was, Jesus was with me. It's like the woman who loses a child, which is a devastating thing, but then loses the kids, the children she still has, because she's so absorbed in the fact of what she's lost. God has truth for all those things. So you don't have to miss out the lot. That's a terrible grieving thing, but God, what does God do for the grieving person? He'll heal the brokenhearted. There's ministry. You'll never get beyond where God can help you. No matter how severe or how bad or how deep it is, God will always be there with an answer and truth to give you. So really, what the issue with, because if we're denying God's work and His plan, this is really an issue of rebellion. And if anyone has would be a good example of that would be the children in the wilderness. They were the perfect example of complainers. And there's some things that I pointed out when I looked through the book of in Numbers, we're going to go back there, as far as the things that they did and how it really robbed them, and some of the, just some points about it. So if I do this right. Complaining ignores God's potential. If you turn over to Numbers, over in Numbers 13, sorry. I'm just going to pick through some of these. And one thing, as I was ministering some of this to a woman after God started speaking to me about the fact of, well, you know, if you're critical about your pastor, you know what you'll raise rebellious children. They'll be real suspect of the leadership. And this woman just went, because she realized in her own life she was always critical against the pastor. She's critical against her husband and now her children. Are just so withdrawn from the church and relationships that she recognized the door she had opened up. Because it'll sow that seed of rebellion. Because that's really, we're denying God's plan and purpose and works in our lives. In this church, God's got awesome things. Is there a problem? Do I think someone's complaining? I'm not saying that. Just the fact of recognizing how precious it is that even the church had to immediately deal. Well, they dealt with, first thing was persecution, then hypocrisy, then complaining. And God was in that, all of it. He helped them through that. But those are things we have to keep nailed down. Because the thing is, I can go complain about pastor at the restaurant and come in here smiling. Does anyone know I complained about him except the person I complained to that I sowed the seed in that I shouldn't have sown in the first place? I don't want to be part of the, you know, think of, aren't you glad certain people came across your path to minister the gospel? That one little act affected you and how many other people? I don't want to be the one to have the inverse of that where I'm sowing something bad in someone's heart that's going to have an impact on one person and a whole bunch of people. Complaining is a serious thing. Proverbs 6, struck down immediately with no remedy. God hates those who sow discord. And I'm not saying that what do you do if you have a complaint? There's things to do. There are legitimate ways to handle an issue. And I'm not saying that we just have to pretend everything's okay and he's up there preaching with his zipper down. You don't have to pretend it's up or ignore it, that type of thing. Have I done that? Yes, I have. And I didn't even have a sermon example to tie into it at the time. I wasn't that fast. All right. Okay, we'll go through this. There's just several aspects about murmuring. One is that it ignores God's potential. Listen to some of that. I'm going to jump around a little bit. Numbers 13:30. And Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and take possession. We are well able to overcome it." So there, he's talking about potential. Now I'm going to jump down to chapter 14, verse 6, for its timing here. It says, "But Joshua and the son of Nun, and Caleb the son of Jep, I'll call him, who were among those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes. And they spoke to all the congregation of the children of Israel, saying, 'This land we pass through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel.'" See, there's the word rebel, because of the complaining. They just saw themselves still as grasshoppers. "Nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." God opened the seas to save them. He opened the heavens to feed them. Poured water from a rock. But for some reason, these giants were just too much for him. Does that make sense? I think I would have no issue with the giants that they're facing at that point if I saw all the seas and the heavens and the rock, all the things that God was doing. Next. I'm going to try and be diligent with my time here. Let's jump to verse 31. I'm going to pick up there, 13:31 back, if you want to back up a little bit. And this is just the bad report. And this is, again, that sowing issue, that murmuring is born or complaining is born in the context of a bad heart, bad report. For Numbers 13:31, "But the men who had gone up with them said, 'We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we.'" Verse 32, "And they gave the children of Israel a bad report in the land which they had spied out, saying, 'The land the land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people whom we saw it are men of great stature. There we saw the giants, the descendants of Anak came from the giants, and we were like grasshoppers in our sight, and so we were in their sight." And I'm just going to jump down to chapter 14 again, verse 1 and 2. And it says, "So all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night." So they spent all night on this whole issue. Not much sleep, verse 2. "And all the children of Israel complained." Say complained. "Complained against Moses and Aaron. And the whole congregation said to them, 'If only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in the wilderness.'" Not a good thing, right? They were beguiled. That means to be charmed or deceived into something. Was the report from those other spies a correct one? It was not, but they believed it, and now they bought it, and now they're suffering for it, and they're in a bad place, and they're about to make some wrong conclusions, which is the next point. Wrong conclusions. And then we'll jump to we'll pick up at verse 3 here again where we're at. And it says, "Why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the sword?" Is this true? Is that what the Lord did for them? Not at all. "Why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and children should become victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt?" Verse 4, "So they said to one another, 'Let us select the leader and return to Egypt.'" The place they were very complaining about getting out, that God supernaturally took them out of, to with all the gold, all the riches of Egypt went with them, and now they want to go back to Egypt. Jump down to verse 10. "And all the congregation said to stone them with stones." Now the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle. So God showed up, protect his leadership. God appeared in the tabernacle of meeting before all the children of Israel. So complaining will distort good judgment. I've seen this in a church with a youth pastor that went bad, and I sat towards the back in a meeting we had. Pastor told everyone, this guy was starting going rogue. He decided that he didn't have to answer to the pastor. He decided he was going to answer only to God. And it was getting real snaky. The pastor said, you know, he had to take him out of the position of leadership. And when leaders go bad, you got to deal with it in front. If someone in the congregation has issue, that's between you and the pastor. But if the leadership goes bad, the pastor has to deal with it in front of the congregation because he needs to protect the body. And so we had the meeting, and it was just surreal to watch the beguilement that, because he got up and says, "Oh, I love you all," the youth pastor. And it took some people out of the church. But what had happened before that is I got a call after the pastor said, "I want you all to go home and pray. Don't want you talking to anyone, just go home and pray." Well, during this few days that we had before this meeting where we're going to talk about why we have to let the youth pastor go, I get a call saying, "Well, we need to get together and pray about things." And the Spirit of God came up from inside of me. I was just a young Greenhorn board member at that point, as the associate pastor, and just came out of me, "Oh, you will hear things, but it will not be by the Spirit of God." And they heard things, and it was not the Spirit of God, but it sounded right to them, and it sounded like they are justified in the actions and the things that they were doing. It was a bad mess. Everyone who went to that prayer meeting got together because they were so concerned about what the pastor was doing. They were gone. Wrong conclusions, but it'll sound right because people can be beguiled, and it's not a good thing to. So this is real life things that can happen, and they do happen. So we can be tricked into things. If the seed is sown into us and that thing starts to spring up, we can be defiled too. So this one kind of bad judgments. I guess this kind of goes without saying. Tried to stone him. This is probably one of my favorite ones. Verse 2, murmuring leads to self-pity. I'm just skipping through some of these for time's sake, but murmuring leads to self-pity. Jump up to verse 2 and 3. You can hear the self-pity here. All the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, "If only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in the wilderness." Verse 3, Why has the Lord? Why has he brought us up to this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and children should become victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? Feeling sorry for themselves. Fear, that's the other one, that complaining will thrive in fear, and this is so common because the whole world marches by fear. Verse 9 of chapter 14, I'll just pick up there, it says, "Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread, their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." Now, is that God's potential? God brought him to the promised land, and God's going to bring him this far just to torment him? Like the cat who plays with the mouse? You ever seen a cat play with a mouse before? Trying to tenderize his dinner a little bit? I wouldn't let a cat do that. A bug, yes, but not a mouse. That's just not, I can't watch that type of thing. I'd be a terrible hunter. I'd be a vegetarian for sure if I was a hunter. Thriving left unchecked usually breeds rebellion, because that's what ended up happening. They rebelled. They were to the point where they wanted new leadership. They wanted some leadership clean out. They didn't ask them to clean out their desk. They said, "We'll take stones and take care of it for you. You and the desk will be gone." And I'll just a few verses I'm going to pick out. Verse 4. 14:4, "So they said to one another, 'Let us select a leader and return to Egypt.'" Jump down to verse 9. "Only do not rebel against the Lord again, nor fear the people of the land." And I'm going to skip down to 10. "And all the congregation said to stone them." Ready to elect new leadership. And complaining's end result is just a general atmosphere of dissatisfaction. And you will be so justified in that dissatisfaction. You will be so justified that you feel justified enough to tell other people about it and start sowing seeds, and it's not a good thing. How many things are we supposed to do without complaining? We're not supposed to complain. We're not supposed to murmur. That means we're disconnected from where God is at that moment, because just like me, I was critical of good people, of good pastors, not because they were bad, but because I had bad people in my life that messed me up. I was a wounded person. I was confused about what really was the reality. Did those people do bad? Yes, and I'm not saying they didn't, but the fact is I'm no longer in that bad place anymore. That makes sense? Verse 2. 14:2, "And all the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron." Criticism and complaining lead to discontent. You get depressed, you get discontent, then you get despondent, and that will always lead to deception. There's a path that road goes down. Majority reports cannot be trusted. People wear their insecurities, people wear their fears on their sleeve, if I can put it that way, and murmuring has no trouble attracting a crowd at all, ever. So God's judgment, and we'll turn over to Psalms. God's judgment on Israel was swift and final. Because to complain is to defame the power and the presence of God. Do I got that one up there? Yeah. Verbally complaining defames God's presence, power, wisdom, and glory. The various things we sang about this morning. Who led them to the promised land? God Almighty. Pillars of fire, smoke, holy armies drowning, manna. How many square miles of that would they pick up every day? Incredible what God did. But it'd be better if we went back to Egypt and ate leeks and onions. I don't like either very much. Psalms 106. So they wanted to die in the wilderness, and guess what they got? Psalms 106, verse 24, we'll pick up there. Psalms 106, 24 through 27. Yes, they despised the pleasant land, they believed not his word, but murmured in their tents and hearkened, this is the night they're crying, murmured in their tents, complained, and hearkened not unto the voice of the Lord. Therefore he lifted up his hand against them to overthrow them in the wilderness, to overthrow their seeds and among the nations, and to scatter them into the lands. Now, turn back, if you would, to Philippians chapter 2, verse 14. I want to show you something here that I just saw the other night. Philippians 2, 14. I'm going to read the verse. It says, do how many things? Do all things. If you're spiritually dyslexic, that probably says do all things with murmuring and complaining. But our version says do all things without murmuring and complaining or disputing. But take a look at the verse in front of that. It is God who is at work in you, both to will and to work for his good pleasure. And then he challenges with this. Do all things without grumbling or complaining. The presence of God is sufficient for you. He's got an answer. You had a problem? He's got an escape. No question you'll ever have that he doesn't have an answer for. I love asking God questions. So love asking God questions. One day I ask God a question. I'm sitting in the driving down the road. I'm going, that was an awesome question. And God says to me, he goes to me, you're pretty proud of yourself, aren't you? I started laughing and go, yeah, I am. And then he says to me, every good and perfect gift comes down from above. It was him giving me the ability to ask that very question. Isn't that cool? God, I'm just trying to figure out what's going on. I'm trying to get this thing solved. God says to me, Andy, it's you trying to fix it that's causing the problem. Again, I'm weak. Christians, you can walk out of things like this, and that's what I'm encouraging you. It's like, okay, I just got to double down on looking even better and not criticizing, even though I've got all this stuff in my heart of past issues with bad pastors and such. I got to keep my heart right. Well, no, it's not your job to be Savior. You are not Deputy Holy Ghost. Just let him do his job, not Barney Fife. Shoot yourself in the foot. Murmuring and complaining is a godless pastime. It's as if there is no God in your life. You're not appreciating where God is in your life at that moment. He has truth for you. He had truth for me about why I complained. You know, I was so good about not the wife and the kids issue, but man, I could rip a pastor apart in no time. I could find faults from top to bottom. And there's no mercy in that. There's no love in that. And find things that weren't even there because I was delusioned. I was not seeing things as they were. I was questioning every smile as being, you want something from me. I'm not going to close my eyes around you because you might come at me when I'm not looking. Is that healthy? Does that sound like rest coming to me? Oh, you're weary and heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. Deliver me from wicked and unreasonable people. I don't want to be around bad pastors anymore. I've had my fill of them. I appreciate the real ones. So, quickly, I'm just going to go through this. What do you do? What do you do if you have to express frustration? There is a way to do it. Pray. Number one, and I'm not just talking about the one-way prayer because I did that for years. I'm talking about dialogical, not just a one-way dialogue. You know, God, why? Out of my mouth into his ear, out of his mouth into mine. Just that whole process, because this is what I used to do. Pray and then wonder, pray and wonder. I used to get God involved. Listen for his voice. He's got things to communicate to you. I guess that's the best way to put it. God has answers for what's going on. If there are things you got to deal with, fine. I have a relative that's so concerned about my tree falling on my house. She lives paranoid. So I was sitting there one day and I'm going, well, God, do I have to be concerned about this tree falling on my house? You know what he had the audacity to do? He said, no. I don't have to live paranoid. I don't have to live with a bunch of what-ifs. I love the fact he gives me the direction and leading. I got issues going on. God says it's going to be okay. I say, God, thank you. I've appreciated the fact of his voice in my life. That I don't only live by what he said, I'm living by what he's saying, which will always agree with what he said. Beyond just having a high school diploma in following God, I want the PhD in following God. And I want to not only help people that just to give them a fish because they're hungry, but teach them how to fish for themselves so they can hear from God on by themselves. It's so good because when you got God, anywhere you go, everywhere you go, you don't have to call someone else up to get directions or, okay, what do I do now? Big difference. So secondly, quickly, take your complaints to someone with authority to rectify the situation. And this board here you have means that if you ever thought the pastor is up to no good with money, women, or something like that, and there's no issues, people. But if there was, there's a way mechanism set up that you could take it to the board to deal with that type of thing. Just as an example, okay? In the home, there's always authority in place. Go to the authority. That's the right place to take these things, to rectify the situation. And when you get people that want to come to you and complain, direct them to the source of help. For instance, this last week, I had a woman who was complaining about my son-in-law about something he was doing. And perfect example, I said, well, I'm going to go talk to him about what we talked about. And it was nothing, because I'm on the board, it was nothing issues with his money or women in his case. You know, that's some of the big moral failures. But I said, I'm going to talk to him about what he said, because what I want to do is get her the ability, because people don't like conflict. So instead of me going to talk to Roger about an issue I have with him, I'm going to go talk to you about my issue with Roger. And that's, I can work at the, I'm a tech at the school, network engineer, and I find that with the staff that I have, everyone wants to talk to someone because I'm just pounding this issue. We're going to communicate. If I got egg in my face, tell me. Don't let me walk around. I sat in a meeting with the general manager. He had a booger hanging out his nose. No one had the guts to tell him. I felt sorry for the guy. I'm just a little peon guy that runs reports in the place, and I'm watching it blow in and out, I was like, We can remain in the fact that God has a way that this issue can be resolved. Ephesians 4:3, and I'll close there, I guess. So, do everything with thanksgiving. Count it all joy. There's no reason why we should ever find ourselves in a place where we got to be complaining, unless we got something inside of us like I did that hasn't been dealt with. Ephesians 4:3. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. That's a New King James Version. It's going to take some work, but if you have people coming at you and saying things they shouldn't be saying, you can direct them. For instance, if it's a pastor issue, in my case, if I would have had someone back then in my life that would have heard me grumbling and complaining, they could have directed me, I think you need to be talking to pastor about this. Well, that's okay. Here's the goofy part, though, just to give you an example. How come I wasn't talking to pastor about it? One, I wasn't mature enough. And secondly, I didn't trust pastors. So at that point, I would probably lead that person to find out why you're so distrusting of people that should be trustable. And I get this, I don't run with scissors. Actually, those last two words were totally unnecessary. We'll go here. John Hopkins, irritability, griping, and anger. This is a study. Says, although previous studies have pointed to a link between anger and heart disease later in life, researchers say it's the first time anger has been shown to affect the risk of heart problems before age 55. In fact, men who said they expressed or concealed their anger, became irritable, or engaged in gripe sessions were 5 times more likely to have an early heart attack than their calmer counterparts. In this study, hot tempers predicted disease long before traditional risk factors like diabetes and hypertension became apparent. And he gives a whole long names of the MD, PhD, and EIEIO at the end of it. And it says, irritable, complaining, griping, angry individuals are 500% more likely to have an early heart attack. A man's belly shall be satisfied with the fruit of his mouth. Right?